Hi everyone, welcome to Cloud Cover. I'm Chris Reisner. Today I'm joined again by Ahashi Bai.
Hello.
And today we've got two very special guests as we wrap up our mini-series on big data. We've got Laura Rebelke and James Baker. Would you guys like to introduce yourselves?
Yes, I'm Laura Rebelke, aka SQL Gal on Twitter, and I've been working with data for most of my career.
Awesome.
Hi, I'm James. I've worked in the SQL and data groups across Microsoft for quite some time. Big interest in big data. Love it all.
Very cool. And today we're going to skip the news and just dive right into the presentation. So what are we going to see today?
Well, we're actually going to talk through a customer scenario. So James and I have had the great pleasure of working with lots of different customers in our current role and our previous roles. And what we wanted to do is walk through some stuff that we did with a customer, Emerson Electric, just this past January to help lift and build out some of their application in Azure. So that's. Did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, one of the criteria that Emerson had was that they needed to be on-premise and in the cloud.
Yes.
And so that was an interesting inflection point that we had to design around as well.
So you will see some decisions that we made to support both of those deployment topologies. But this is really around what you've probably been hearing, Internet of Things. And this is the data analytics around Internet of Things. So you'll see a nice architecture, and we'll talk through some key things that were kind of special about this engagement, things that I found special anyway about the engagement and that we were able to light up in Azure.
So. Very exciting. Let's go ahead and get to it.
Well, I think that you've seen this slide a few times.
Maybe a few times in the past few episodes.
And I wanted to reintroduce this because this really does articulate what we built out in the last within the last few months with this customer, and it talks through the fact that we're gathering data. We've got gateways. We've got data that's coming from devices and sensors and things. And in Emerson's case, this is all coming from truly sensors. They make sensors. That's part of their business. And they have an application called Delta V that we'll talk through that is an existing application. And they have a gateway that's sitting within their customer sites that manages all of these sensors. Now, what they want to do is take this application, which is really a reporting application today, more around historical analysis and historians, and move this to the next generation around process analysis and predictive analytics and prescriptive analytics. To do that, we need to make sure that we can get all of that data into the platform. That data is going to be coming through a queuing system, and in our case, we're going to be looking at Kafka. I think you've probably heard and been talking about event hubs over the last few episodes. In this particular customer case, to James' point, they needed on-prem and in the cloud. So they've been working with Kafka. So we built out a process to deploy Kafka up in Azure. And the data then streams through with some kind of a streaming engine. It could be Azure Stream Analytics, or it could be Storm. And then it lands into some kind of persistence layer or goes straight into a dashboard.
So in the last video, we saw like a chart of how like different customer scenarios and how they, you know, the different pieces they might use. And this looks like it's a great example, because I think Hashi was saying how it's really cool to see how you might plug some open source thing in with something that Microsoft has and, you know, the different pieces. So this is really going to be really cool to see how it works.
And also some of those decision points, like James was saying, where they decided that they could customize for an Azure deployment in some aspects, but there were other aspects that they said, no, we still want to keep this with an open platform. Mm-hmm. So,
and actually, you just mentioned the reason you picked Kafka in this case is because they want both on-premise and on-cloud deployment.
Right.
But for the on-premise deployment, where did data go eventually? Does it end up in the on-premise data centers, or it goes to Azure eventually?
It still stays in their data center. They have a set of customers. Now, and I will say that when we first started talking with them, we've had a long-standing relationship with Emerson. And early on, they felt that many more of their customers were resistant to putting data in the cloud. Mm-hmm. And of late, it seems that there is actually a lot more customers that are interested in putting data in the cloud or open to that option. But there are still some customers that feel that that data coming off the sensors is IP, and they don't want that going out of their data center. So everything stays in the in their data center and for a set of customers.
There's also some latency aspects associated with it. I mean, in the case of some of these oil refineries and so on like that, they're very remote locations. Mm-hmm. you know, internet access isn't necessarily great, and they need low latency decision making around some of that. So just processing locally is a genuine thing for them. There's other scenarios where going up into the cloud is entirely appropriate. So it's not always about data security. It might be about other aspects that affect the decision.
Right.
Makes sense. Right.
So as I mentioned, this customer in particular, what they wanted to do was take an existing application, what they call Delta V, and move this into that next generation of predictive analytics, prescriptive analytics, and really provide a better platform for their customers to understand when things are going wrong in a process. So their customers are doing things like creating very specialized oils, creating very specialized processes, and they're getting data off of these sensors through this manufacturing process. And the data that's coming off the sensors up until this point through their existing application, by and large, just goes into a historian and is used for some kind of reports. Backward analysis, right? What they want to do is be able to leverage that data, build models off of it, and understand that, in fact, that they can do some kind of prediction that because of the certain data that's coming off this sensor, we can understand that it's likely that this batch that we're building, that the customer, their customer is building, might go bad. Or it might be too good, that it's outside a defined quality control metric.
So they're really solving two problems, or you guys solved two problems with them. One was being able to scale them out into the cloud, and the other was being able to take it from just doing historical analysis into doing that predictive and all right, great.
And what they call continuous data and analytics, something that's going to be very real time or very near real time of before that data even persists someplace that they can analyze and understand if something's going bad.
Great. So.
And to that end, they built out an architecture. They started designing this architecture, and as we talked about, a lot of this was designed for an on-prem deployment. And it included some components around the open source Apache area, which include Kafka. We've got HBase. There's some additional visualization layers that they were looking at from the open source community. And that includes some of those visualizations to help just provide some better analysis around, you know, what's going wrong and why it's going wrong. So if we get into our architecture, so what did we end up building? And this is a visualization that talks through some of the architecture of what we put up into Azure. And this was over about a 3-day period in January. Yep. So we actually did a pretty good job of getting things up and running up in Azure. That includes, if we look through these different numbered items, what they have for an on-site gateway. This existed already. They had a process. They have a system that is gathering sensor data and being a store and forward in some cases and a command control in other cases to understand what devices it's connecting to and make sure that it can forward that information onto the rest of the application. They had a simulator that was generating data, that was creating all of the sensor data. And then that moves over to this portal VM, which is really a role. It's a worker role that's saying we're going to grab the data off the gateway. We're going to forward that up to our messaging system with Kafka. Now, we don't have Kafka as a service. We don't. We have Event Hubs, and Event Hubs is a fantastic service. This customer wanted to standardize on Kafka. They'd made that decision.
Were they already using Kafka in their own data centers?
They were for this application.
Right.
So we worked with them to build out a process, and we'll talk through and walk through how that looks, to install Kafka on HD Insight clusters through a script component.
And it's probably worth making a point here. They didn't want to do sort of the IaaS approach and spin up a bunch of VMs and install Hadoop and their own components on there. They wanted to take advantage as much of the fully managed services as they could. And so that's why they chose HD Insight as a starting point. And because HD Insight includes HBase, includes Storm, the only component we really were missing were Kafka.
Exactly. For them, they just want to say as much as possible, just give me an endpoint to put and get data and or to move information around. I just need that endpoint. Mm-hmm. So we worked to build out a single cluster that included Kafka and Storm. So Storm for that stream processing. We'll revisit what that means. And I know that James is ready to talk through Storm. But I think that might have just been your last episode.
It was indeed.
Okay. What we did that was interesting with Storm, and this was probably some of the more exciting things that we did from a data person perspective, we have this service out there, Azure ML. And Azure ML is machine learning. It allows you to gather data and basically have that data categorize or classify itself and come back and tell you that these are the three or four events that cause an event to happen. Mm-hmm. So we developed a model with them through a previous engagement. So they had a model out there to do some exception prediction, that this thing is going to be an outlier or an exception. When we built out the Storm implementation up in Azure, we actually worked with them and their existing code to do an in-stream evaluation against a web service API that is calling out to the Azure ML model. So when you build a model in Azure ML, you could say, I'd like to operationalize this. Give me a web service API. Mm-hmm. We took that web service API, and what James is going to walk you through is how we built that into the Storm implementation.
Great.
Yeah, so imagine that you can evaluate data before it's even persisted someplace.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting.
Very cool.
We also had an HBase cluster, so that is our store. That is the data store, so the data goes out and persists out to HBase. And then we had dashboards, visualizations that were built off of that.
Great.
So, but what we want to talk through, we've got a couple of fun things that we did. The first is we're going to walk through the implementation of Kafka running on the Storm cluster, and then James is going to take it away with the Azure ML part, the integration.
Perfect.
So I think in one of the past episodes, you guys talked through script components.
A little bit.
A little bit. So let's talk a little bit more about script components. The clusters in HDInsight allow you to have a pretty configurable environment. You can choose different operating systems, right? You can have Linux or you can have Windows,
yep.
Right? So we give a lot of choice. You can choose machine sizes. You talked through different machine sizes, mm-hmm. right? And now you can also have a post configuration or a post install script run that may install other things. And there are some great examples out there when you go to the HDInsight homepage to do a post install, to install things like R, Solr, Spark, Giraffe, and now what we are building is Kafka.
Great, and we'll include a link to the page with the tutorials on that underneath the video.
Yes, we will. Thank you. And basically how this works is you've got your general process that happens when you say, I want a cluster. So you go through the wizard and say, give me a cluster. The cluster goes through a number of steps, and you can see this happen as you're looking at the portal or getting the responses from PowerShell. At some point, it's going to ask you, as you see here, it's going to ask you, do you want to customize the cluster? And if you have put in a customization script, a cluster post-install script, it will go through and run that on either a single node or on multiple nodes, and then return back an operational cluster. So to do this, what we needed to have available were the Kafka binaries, and these we downloaded from the Apache site. Mm-hmm. We needed to do a little bit of customization on those binaries to make them work up in Azure. And I'll talk through a little bit of what that means.
Great.
We created a PowerShell script, and I can show you what that script looks like if you're interested.
Sure.
And then we just run the provisioning. So from a binary perspective, there were a couple of things that we needed to customize in the binaries. One is we needed to add this NSSM .exe to the package. And this basically allows you to have anything run as a Windows service, because Kafka itself is not a native Windows service,
sure.
right? So this allows you to run this as a service on Windows. We needed to update a couple of the server properties within the binaries, just to make sure that it understands where our zookeeper nodes are and, you know, some of that information. And then we save it as a zip. Now, it's often not saved as a zip when you're downloading it from the open source community, but we have these helper scripts that are available when you create these PowerShell scripts. And like I said, there's some great samples out there. And if you look and just kind of break open what those scripts are doing, you'll see a couple of things that they are taking advantage of, these functions, these scripts that get downloaded during this provisioning process. One is that it will open up a zip file, something as simple as that. So because we already had that script available in these helper scripts, we just needed to save it as a zip.
So now, the steps you did here, is this going to be specific to Emerson, or could anybody that
anybody
wanted to run
Kafka
do
yes.
this? Great.
Yeah. This would be anybody, and this is the same, similar kind of process if you were going to customize your own script to install something else out on any of these clusters.
Great.
Which you can do. Just create your own process.
And here you chose to host the Kafka cluster on HD Insight. Is that because of the performance? Because, say, on Azure, you can host like a Kafka cluster on cloud service or a bunch of virtual machines as well.
Good question. You want to answer that?
Yeah. Well, so given that we already need an HD Insight service for things like HBase, we also want to take advantage of Storm to do the inline processing or the real near real-time processing. Rolling Kafka into that same cluster just sort of made perfect sense. Yes, you could have had a different hosting model, but hosting within HD Insight was the most sort of lowest cost option for MSN at that time.
All right, so here we have a look at the script. And as I mentioned, there are some other examples that are available out there. You can download the examples, and I like to reverse engineer what other people have done and to understand, you know, how to build out some of these scripts. So that was a lot of the process that we started with in this engagement. So you'll notice that it's taking a couple of parameters. The first parameter, it's asking for the location of the PowerShell script for the installer. The second is the location of the binaries. And that is, in both cases, I put them up in Azure. So this just was a URI address that we passed into our configuration script for when we built the Storm cluster. So I mentioned that there were some helper scripts, and I just want to kind of draw your attention. If you look through here, it's going to download these helper scripts from this HDI configurations.blob.core, these are helper scripts that the HD Insight team at Microsoft have built. And if you download that script, you just put that into a browser, it downloads the script. You'll notice that it's doing some fun functions. It will expand the HDI zipped file. It will invoke a script. These are all things that you can take advantage of when you're building out your own PowerShell configuration script.
Okay. Now, the site you mentioned earlier where it tells you how to do all the post installs, is that where people will go to find these helper scripts?
The helper scripts are actually, it's a kind of a little known secret, or a well-known secret, I should say. So I found out about it first and foremost just by breaking open some of the example PowerShell scripts that were available in the tutorials, and then just reaching out and asking people a little bit more about what's going on behind the scenes.
Okay, so you have her permission to reach out to her if you have questions.
I'm actually very happy to answer those questions.
Awesome.
This is a fun process. So from here, as I mentioned, the rest of the script is just going through the process of taking that expanded zip file that's been pushed out to the different nodes and doing the install, running the install, and making sure that the proper configurations for things like Zookeeper and some of the broker IDs are set correctly.
Great.
So this is just that final step. If you use the portal, the wizard in the portal to walk through the install of any of your HD Insight clusters, the final step is, do you want to add a script action? The script action in this case was to install Kafka. As I mentioned, I put all of my installed binaries and my PowerShell script up in Azure into a blob store, and so I could just pass in that location into the script URI, and then whether you want it to install on all nodes or just on the head node or a single node. In this case, it's Kafka. We want it to scale, right? So we install on all nodes. And then the parameters of, as I mentioned, the script asks for parameters. And that was our quick little summary of installing Kafka up on the Storm cluster.
Great.
So I'm going to hand it over to James to walk through some good stuff with Storm.
Perfect.
Okay, so thanks, Lara. I believe Hashi and Chris, you already did a session on Storm.
That was just the last episode,
yeah. Storm. Great, okay. So just to sort of quickly recap, Storm's essentially made up of what they call a topology. A topology is a sort of a wiring of things, the way you might sort of create a network topology in your data center. But the things that we're sort of wiring together are things called spouts and bolts. Now, spouts typically sort of receive data from a source, in our case, or in the Emerson case, it's from Kafka. And bolts do processing on it. They can do any sort of processing they like. They're pretty unconstrained in what they can perform and what they can do with the data. But the great thing is that a bolt can do some processing on some data and then just pass it down to the next item in the topology, which is probably another bolt. So you can do things like aggregations in one bolt and then persist some data in another bolt. And the thing that I want to sort of show today is calling out to Azure machine learning service in one bolt to go and score a data point. And this helps us on our objective of being able to do predictive analytics.
Makes sense.
So just quickly in the code, so for those that have never done anything with Storm before, you generally write your bolts and your spouts in Java, and here we are in Eclipse. And you can see straight up into the application, we are starting to wire up a topology, and then we add a spout. Now, it turns out that there's an out-of-the-box spout for Kafka. Remember, we're receiving data from Kafka. Mm-hmm. There is an out-of-the-box spout for Kafka, but in the Emerson solution, we wanted to do some pre-aggregation and some pre-filtering. There's nothing that would stop you being able to do that filtering in downstream bolts, but we decided to build that filtering up into the first spout that we did, and so we've created a custom aggregate spout.
Okay, here's a newbie question.
Yeah.
So when do you decide where to put logic into the spout or the bolt?
It's generally it comes down to maintainability, where you think your components can be mostly reused, because as you sort of wire up this topology, mm-hmm. you get a lot. You quite often need to reuse components for things like filtering, for time series aggregation, those sorts of things, mm-hmm. and so you could sort of have those units of reuse. There is nothing stopping you putting everything into a single bolt and calling it done. Mm-hmm. That's not really taking advantage of the system. The other aspects of obviously are that the connections between bolts and spouts gives the opportunity for the cluster to scale out that operation. And so you don't get sort of concentrated on a single node in the cluster. The cluster scales the work out across all of those nodes. So, you know, there are a couple of design pivots, but generally it's not a super critical decision. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is.
My question was where to put logic between a bolt and a spout. You were saying you were trying to do some filtering and aggregation in the spout.
Yep.
Right. But when do you decide if the logic should go into the spout or go in the bolt? Yeah. I got the idea of have separate bolts.
Yep.
But where do we make that judgment?
So again, it's not a super critical judgment decision. It will generally be about how much processing do I need to do to achieve filtering, for instance. Mm-hmm. And if it's a significant amount of processing, then you might consider a separate bolt, because that allows the filtering bolt to be scaled independently of the spout, which is just the ingest of data into the system. Okay. So that's sort of maybe one of your pivots. The other pivot is, you know, if you have reusable filtering logic, it's reasonable idea to abstract that out into a separate component, which you can reuse in downstream bolts. So we're sort of constructing this bolt. Now, in this particular case, we're a very simple topology. All we've done is scale out the ingest from Kafka, and then we process it in a single bolt up into machine learning. We do some time series aggregates. We then persist the data into HBase, in our case. Longer term, we're going to look at using the connector for Power BI so that we can drive a real-time dashboard directly out of Storm, but that's not in the code that I'm going to show you today. So as you can see, we come through here, we create our spout, we then do a series of bolts which are about aggregating the data. Because in IoT worlds, you get a lot of sensor input. That sensor input generally isn't sort of curated in the way that analytics needs it. And so a lot of the times you need to aggregate that information up. And just over, say, a time series, or do some filtering, or just sort of compress maybe three readings that you get off a sensor into a single logical reading. Mm. So that's typically what's going on in these aggregate bolts here. The one key thing, especially for the Azure ML scoring scenario that we wanted to do, was the time series. We don't generally control the rate at which
sensor readings come into the system, but we want to score them based on, okay, what's happened every half an hour. And that's generally a good approach, especially in some of these high throughput systems. You don't necessarily want to go and score every data point because the system's probably not going to scale for you. But whereas if you, even at high frequency, you can scale, you can aggregate over a 5-second window and then score that aggregated data point, that makes the system a lot more scalable.
So basically you're breaking down, you're, you know, calling out to your machine learning algorithm fewer times because doing it over, you know, very, very small interval wouldn't be as meaningful, but doing it over a slightly larger actually provides you more information, is a little bit more useful.
Exactly. And generally, high frequency readings, there's no value in scoring each and every one of them. For some sort of DSP sort of applications, it would be, but it's probably unlikely that you're going to run a DSP style application here. But for this sort of predictive analytics, it's sort of been able to predictively determine whether a pipe's going to fail or a pump's going to fail or the pressure's going to exceed a threshold.
Or if the temp's gone too high within a certain batch process over a period of time, that it's likely to continue getting higher, or things, and it's going to spoil whatever batch process is going on.
Exactly. Yep. And so, you know, being able to reduce down the scoring rate is a useful thing to go and do.
Great.
So that's what we're doing here in these bolts. It's called print bolt. It's probably a bit of a misnomer, but that's essentially what it's doing. It's doing time series aggregate across that. We then go and have another bolt, which we're calling the Invoke Model Bolt, which is the thing that's going out and calling out to the Azure ML web service. So I just want to quickly switch out of Storm here to give you a look at some of the Azure machine learning aspects. Have we covered that, by the way, previously?
We've done machine learning in a previous episode, not as part of this series.
Okay, right.
But so, you know, people should be somewhat familiar with
okay,
what's going
all
on.
Right.
A little bit.
Yep. So here we are in the Azure ML model for the Emerson logic. I don't want to get into the details of what we're doing in the model because that's not what we're sort of really talking about today. But suffice to say, we have a model which goes and scores data for the purposes of predictive analytics, determining whether a failure is about to occur. And so there's a series of components that the model flows through. What we've done is once we're happy with the model and we've scored the model over a fairly significant data set, we can go and what they call operationalize the model, which means that the model is exposed as a set of REST endpoints, and we can then call those endpoints with a piece of data. The model will be invoked across that piece of data, and we'll get our analytics. And so from the portal, here we are in the model designer. There's a button down here because it's already been clicked, it's grayed out, but you can go and publish that web service. The cool thing about that then is that you get this web service on a different page in the Azure ML portal. There's a couple of key points of data that we need off this page. One of them is the API key. This is how we secure the API so that no random Joe can start using our API. But that API key can be shared across multiple consumers. And so that's a piece of data we need. The other piece of data we need, if we click onto this API page, which I've got going here, is the endpoint itself. And so you can see highlighted here, it's a bit obfuscated, but there's the endpoint which our clients need to go and call. The great thing about this API endpoint is that it gives you full examples of showing you what method you need to call on it. There's the API again, what headers you need on the request, and what the request body needs to be. And this is where in that body is that we're going to embed the data for the data point that we want to score. And it'll also tell us what sort of response we can expect. Again, more headers and the response again in JSON, which gives us our scored analysis. So great, armed with all of that piece of information, we now go back to Storm and we start looking at saying, okay, well, what does it mean to, to be able to invoke that? So again, it's just a REST endpoint, and so all we need to do is make a web client API call to it, and we're done. So this is the invoke model bolt that we've got. We're assuming that data's coming in, and then in the execute method, which is a standard override for bolts, we accept the tuple, which is the data point that we want to score. We just do some mechanics of simply setting up for any REST call. There's nothing special here. One of the things that we need to sort of point out, there it is. There's our address that we saw before from the portal. There's the API key that we saw before from the portal. And so they're embedded in code. Probably in a production service, you would put that in configuration. But at the moment in code, it's fine. We embed that in the authorization endpoint. And we can see there, that's where we're calling the URL. We do set up some our JSON request. Remember, we saw that the request body needs to be a JSON component as well. And so we're just having to use a JSON component that's available in Java. And we're setting up the data. Here happens to be the piece of data that we're using. So that's the time of the data. And here is the component of the data that we want to score right there. We then go and simply invoke the API call. We get the output stream, and then we deserialize the JSON as we would for any sort of thing. And so you can sort of easily see that there's no magic in terms of what we need to do here. The value is in being able to wire this into a bolt and then wire that into a topology that Storm is processing. Mm-hmm. From the data that we're outputting here, it's probably worth showing how we output data from the bolt. And so there's a collector member here, and we simply emit the data in there. And so this bolt isn't concerned about how the data's persisted. It just does not care. All it's doing is emitting the data back into the topology, and then the rest of the topology can go and do with that what it will, whether it's storing it in HBase, pushing it out to the Power BI dashboard, mm-hmm. or some other use that the application may need. So that's sort of it in a nutshell. You can see how simple it is to call mm-hmm. that endpoint. And there we've got predictive analytics within Storm. For sort of fairly cheaply. And it may be that we sort of work at developing a component that is sort of reusable. We publish that in some sort of gallery, but you can see there's not a lot of work that you need to do as a developer to be able to invoke this service.
It's a web service API call.
Exactly.
Yeah. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
Almost seems easy.
Yeah.
Right.
Can I ask a detailed question?
Yes.
So what if the execute method fails? Will the bolt be called again with the
So that's one of the values of Storm, is that as the data point flows through the topology, you can see here this very last call that we've got is a thing to say ACK. And that tells Storm, which is running the topology, that this bolt is completed with that data point. If it doesn't receive an ACK, it will re-execute this bolt, mm-hmm. possibly on a different machine, to ensure that the data gets processed. There's a bunch of configuration parameters when you set up your topology about what your retry policy should be, but that's one of the values of Storm as a distributed execution engine.
So in this case, a data piece can be partitionally handled twice.
It can be, and if you have requirements in your application mm-hmm. that there's adverse side effects from processing it twice, you can set up a retry policy to prevent that.
Okay.
So that's certainly a legitimate thing to go and do. Generally, you want your ability to be your topology to be resilient, and so you want to try and avoid those side effects. And even when you sort of think about how do I persist the data, you want to be able to do that in a resilient fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was wondering, because in the last episode, we were talking Storm. I remember it was said the Storm was guaranteeing the messages processed just once.
Yes. So it is processed once end-to-end. That's a guarantee that Storm gives you.
Okay.
If you get local failures throughout each individual bolt, Storm will retry for you in pursuit of the objective of being able to process that data point once.
And make sure that the data flows through the whole topology once.
Exactly right, yeah. Mm. And so at the individual bolt level, you need to be resilient to being able to say, okay, maybe this data point is getting retried.
Makes sense. Okay.
Cool.
So another thing that I just think was interesting to call out, you know, at the beginning, James brought up one of the objectives from Emerson was that they needed to have a deployment that is on-prem as well as in the cloud. And here we brought in a service, and there is no on-prem version of the Azure ML service, mm-hmm. right? But that is also something that, you know, given the fact that all you're doing is using that model, it's a trained model to determine whether or not, you know, these three, four things, you know, will cause a failure. Just it's a web service API call to basically loop back and provide a response that seemed acceptable from Emerson's perspective.
Yeah, there's no data being persisted in the the cloud, and so therefore they sort of meet their on-premise requirement.
Right.
And that's one of the really nice things about that being able to expose the API for machine learning is that it doesn't matter if you're doing something in Azure or somewhere else, you can access that API from anywhere.
Spot on.
Absolutely. Yep. Very nice. Yep. Very cool.
All right. So those were the two main things that I wanted to just call out. I have one last slide just to show through some a learning map, a link to the learning map.
Sure, why don't we switch over?
Okay. So as I mentioned, we've got a couple of links. I just wanted to show that this is a really great place to start. So I could give you a laundry list of 20 different links of where to go for all these different areas. But honestly, just go to this one link. It's an HD Insight learning map. It's Hadoop on Azure learning map that will walk you through, here's where to get tutorials. Here's how you can get some better documentation, get into the documentation. This is kind of a one-stop resource to get to everything that we talked about for all the other links.
Great, and we'll make sure, again, that's down beneath the video.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for coming here and showing us this real-world example. It's so cool to see the different pieces and how things plug together and how easy it was to call out to machine learning. Very cool stuff.
Cool.
So we already know that you're SQL Gal on Twitter, so if you give us one of these, we'll actually edit that in for you.
One of these?
Yeah, just like that,
okay.
And we'll put it in there. James, are you on Twitter?
I have no handles whatsoever.
You can't do this.
So you could. We just wouldn't put anything. Maybe a sad face.
How about if you do this and they write no handle?
No handle.
Perfect.
Well, but if you ping me, I'll make sure he gets the message.
Awesome. So send all requests to James straight to her. All right. Well, thank you guys again so much for being here. Really appreciate it. And thanks, everybody, for watching the miniseries on Big Data and for watching Cloud Cover. Be sure to follow us at Cloud Cover Show, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.